For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. Thank you guys so much for listening and for tuning in. We had a really great first hour, a lot of great stuff. We talked to a very good friend of mine, works here at the station. He kind of helped coach me through what a vasectomy is going to be like. That was lots of fun. So if you guys want to listen to that, check out the podcast. Download Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. Get it on Apple, Spotify, lots of great stuff. Right now, though, we're lucky because it's the news roundup, which means Lisa Brooks joins us. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And Matt Butler, welcome.
Good to be here.
All right. Before we get into all our other chit chat, I'm going to play you a trivia clip. Okay. You can have a chance to guess at it, as we do every single night. Our listeners, they know this clip. They know it well. And I don't know, maybe two people got it wrong. 1,005 people got it right. All right, Lisa, take a guess. I know Matt knows this already.
Dear Red, if you're reading this, you've gotten out. And if you've come this far, maybe you're willing to come a little further. You remember the name of the town, don't you?
Zihuatanejo.
I could use a good man to help me get my project on wheels. I'll keep an eye out for you and the chessboard ready. Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. I will be hoping that this letter finds you, and finds you well. Your friend, Andy.
Get busy living, or get busy dying.
Pretty good movie. Lisa Brooks, take a guess.
Yeah, best ending of a movie. One of the best ever. Shawshank Redemption.
Do you like the movie? I take it you like it.
I love that movie, yes.
Yeah, Matt, you knew
it's
that right away, right?
I knew it, yep. It's a good one.
That's one of those movies that anytime it's on, like I don't have cable anymore, but when I did have cable and I had TBS, I felt like it was on TBS every other minute. You could just turn it on at any time and wherever it was at in the movie, it's just like one of those ones you watch till the end.
Yeah.
I loved it. So great. So great. I didn't know this for a long time, but then I found out eventually. Stephen King, based on a book that he wrote, Shawshank Redemption, right? Based on Stephen King's book. The movie has a magical quality to it. I'm wondering if like that's kind of because Stephen King's movies often deal with, you know, like magical or paranormal or ghostly things. And I'm wondering if, you know, there's just this quality to that movie. It's like it's in such a dark place. You know, it's in a prison. It's, you know, back in the, what is this, the 1930s, I think, you know, through the 50s or something.
Was it? Yeah, I forget when that was.
I think it spans like 20-something years.
Yeah, it spans a long time.
But, you know, because he has like Raquel Welch up on his board and he has all these different posters of these Hollywood starlets at the time. But there is just this quality to it that's so magical. And I don't know exactly what it is, but it's just such a great movie. Oh, so great. All right, let's get into the news roundup. Let's see here. Every day we look back on all the other shows, figure out what they're talking about, and then we chat about it. On Seattle's Morning News, Greg Tomlin was talking about how his family spent spring break, which had just... For some people, it's spring break this week. For my family, it was last week. Let's hear what Greg did.
For lots of families with school children like mine, the month of April means spring break, a traditional week off for the kiddos to enjoy before the final push toward the end of the school year. And about this time each year, it's not uncommon for a lot of us to feel a sense of wanderlust. After all, wouldn't it be great to venture out of the Pacific Northwest with the clan and find some sunshine to escape this omnipresent grayness that continues to fill our days? And wouldn't it be amazing to return from a vacation in SoCal or Vegas or even Hawaii with that glorious sun-kissed skin, looking refreshed, relaxed, and full of that aloha spirit? Yes, of course, that would be great. But for one reason or another, traveling just isn't in the cards for many families. That was the case with us this year. So my wife and I had a moment of inspiration and decided that during our staycation, we'd let each one of our three kids plan a day for the family. Our 13-year-old, 10-year-old, and 7-year-old could call the shots for all of us, within reason, of course. We set little limitations and hoped the kids would embrace the idea with gusto. To our great surprise, they were thrilled at the possibilities. This year, our spring break was filled with lots of quality time spent together as a family, lots of money saved in our pocketbooks, and lots of storing up memories together. I wouldn't have traded it for anything. After all, it's not exactly the activities that matter most. It's the people you're sharing the activities with.
I feel like I just had an epiphany. That is such a great idea.
Yeah.
Letting your kids choose what they're going to do for their special day. I mean, like, you know, we go to like take our kids out. Like, what do you guys want to do? Ice cream, yogurt, or whatever. We give them options, but letting them set the agenda for the entire day, that'd be so much fun.
I want to know what they did. That sounds wonderful.
Little kid things, I guess. I mean, I don't think his kids are that young, though. I mean, he's,
what
I think
he say, 13, 11, and 9?
Yeah, so like maybe slightly older little kid things. My kids are still kind of little, but I think it sounds really fun.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Really great idea. Do you guys remember two things about this also I thought of? Do you guys remember when the term staycation first kind of came about? Do you remember that?
I don't.
Back in 2008, the first time I remember hearing it was during the last like financial crisis. Do you remember back in 2008?
Right. I think you're right. Yeah.
I had never heard that term before and I was working here and they had My Northwest put together like a list of staycation things because nobody, I mean like everybody's money just went away.
Yeah.
It was really this like very, very difficult time for everybody. And they were like, oh, okay, well, this summer, since nobody has money, why don't we do a staycation list and all these fun things that you can do in and around your towns. And that was the first time I ever like heard that concept. And I love it. I mean, it's such a great, you know, just like you can purposefully and intentionally try to find things in your area that you don't normally do, like play tourist for a day.
And there's a lot of people come here to visit.
Yeah.
So why don't we just pretend like we're them? I think that's an excellent idea.
A lot of times we don't think about the stuff that's in our own backyard. We think about the big destination, Vegas, LA, or whatever. We ignore things that are right close to us that are wonderful.
Totally. Yeah. Like we took our kids, I think it was a couple, I mean, maybe like a month ago now, but they had never been to the, you know, Pike Place. And, you know, we have very young kids, and so it just wasn't something that we had done yet with them. And so we took them down there, and we did, you know, we did like the, we went by the gum wall, which they just like couldn't believe. Yeah. It was disgusting. My four-year-old kept walking over to it and wanted to touch it, so we had to stop him. And then we saw people throwing fish, you know, all that stuff at Pike Place that we all take for granted because we've lived here and we're adults. They were looking at it like, you know, you look at something through a kid's eyes and it's just like, you're just discovering it for a whole second time. It's
That's really wonderful.
The other thing, he said the word wanderlust. Have you guys seen the movie Wanderlust?
Mm-mm.
Paul Rudd, Jennifer Aniston. There's not much I can tell you about it. It's just, it's a wonderful, hilarious movie. Just go, if you get a chance, if you like comedies and you like watching funny things. And if you like Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston, they're both very likable people. It's a fantastic movie. Check it out. Wanderlust. All right. G and Ursula, we're talking about Seattle and grunge.
Is grunge just kind of a part of the city life that you love and accept, or do you not like it?
I love and accept it now. When I first moved here, I was wondering why everybody was dressed like bums. I was wondering why I kept seeing people with secondhand stuff from the thrift store. And, like, you think that's cool, right?
What's
all these different logos and slogans and don't comb your hair and wearing. What are you wearing? So, again, this was 25 years ago. These are the things that I said when I first moved here. So, this whole, oh, that's a grunge look. Oh, yuck. So, now, y'all know I ain't gonna lie to y'all. I'm just telling you. And by the way, if you dress that way now, I'm telling you that I love and appreciate it now. When I first moved here, I didn't understand it. It was weird. I'd never seen anything like it. Like
you have to remember you had a spinning lit up belt buckle.
I didn't have it then. But
I miss the old Seattle so much. And
Pioneer
and
Square.
The vibe of it. I mean, Pioneer Square was filthy back in the day. And we still like wax romantically about it. If you look at the old restaurants, places like Beth's Cafe that have like four generations of nicotine and cigarette smoke that have been painted over. I love it. If your restaurant has a deep fryer that's been constantly in operation for 40 plus years, if your bathroom has like stickers all over the wall and graffiti tags everywhere. You know what? That I love cities like that, and we have replaced it entirely with glass, steel, cardboard box condos and McMansion style housing that I absolutely cannot stand.
All right, do you guys like Seattle's rocker vibe, grunge? Is that the question? That's just, do you like Seattle grunge?
Yeah, like the thing that drew me to Seattle initially was the music and the music reputation. So I became aware of it through that. And I think that, you know, advances are fine. Progress is great in some ways. But you have a lot of cities globally that are just becoming more technified and more sterile. I really appreciate some of that element in my city experience.
Sure.
So I'm there for it.
Lisa, what do you think?
Well, I was doing news on King Radio back in the day with Dory Monson, working with him, and Pat Cashman, and we had a morning show, and none of us got it. It was happening all around us, and none of us quite understood. And the day Kurt Cobain died, I remember, like, my sister got it, and she was in tears, and she was at Seattle Center for the spontaneous memorial that popped up with.
Wasn't the 30th anniversary of that just recently?
It just happened last week.
Last week.
And it was a very significant time for this city, and I hope that we don't forget that it changed us.
Yeah. I don't like it, but I do recognize how impactful it was on the culture of the world. I mean, that look of, you know, Kurt Cobain and Nirvana and just the general, like, kind of dirtiness then spread over all of, like, popular media. Everybody in the early 90s dressed like that, and, you know, they all looked like
flannel shirt, t-shirt,
yeah, ripped jeans, yeah, like 3-day-old dirty hair, didn't bathe in a while, like, just that look. It, like, was the cool look. And
you go to some tech campuses and they still look like that.
And now that look will cost you way more
than
it did.
Very expensive.
Back then.
Yeah. It's very expensive. I'm with you though. I I'm okay that I don't love it, but I understand why, you know, people have an affinity for it because it's part of the city's history
it
and
is.
that's kind of neat.
Where would Detroit be without Motown?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to remember how many places I would have gone back in the day. I was too young for grunge. Obviously, I was like
12,
7 when it was happening. But when I lived in Seattle as a young 20-something, there were still a lot of like old dirty places to go, like old dirty bars, and you know, it still had kind of that feeling.
I'd been to some of those bars. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't just the Crocodile Cafe. It was Rebar.
Yeah, I remember that place. Yeah,
Rebar was a huge place, and I was singing with the King Band at the time, and we did a show at the Rebar, and it was like everybody was like, "Oh, that's so cool! Do you know who's been on that stage?"
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
It's fun. It's fun to have connections to the past. I like that. All right, let's hear. You guys want to talk about Dolly Parton for a minute?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
So Dolly Parton's Imagination Library is a program that mails books to children age 0 to 5 for free. It's no cost to the family.
Yep.
It's a really cool program. And that Dolly Parton's Imagination Library partnered with the Washington State Department of Corrections because they wanted to get books into the visiting rooms for incarcerated people, children. So when you go to visit your children in prison, meaning that your children are brought to you,
right.
There's a book in there.
Your kids are in prison.
And this is what Cheryl Strange said. She said, "We know that strong bonds between parent and child are crucial for successful reentry. This partnership allows us to promote healthy relationships and positive memories that will last a lifetime, and also promotes literacy at an early age when it's most important to foster a love for reading. This is very cool. Thank you, Dolly Parton, for being a living saint." And again, all the books are free for the kids.
You know, it's National Library Week. Did you know that this week?
I hate this week.
In a time when libraries have never been under attack more than they are today.
I hate reading.
Do you know that Dolly Parton has given away almost a quarter of a billion, in the 30 years that this project's been, that Dolly started this?
Yeah.
Almost a quarter billion books.
That's
have been
cool.
Given away for free.
That's
3 million
cool.
books a month this organization mails out, and it's all Dolly.
And still yet nobody reads. Andrew, what was the last crazy book that you read?
I'm currently reading A Tale of Two Cities right now, actually.
What? A Tale of Two Cities?
Yeah.
Okay, you can stay. Nate, what are you reading right now? You reading anything?
Yeah, it's just a very boring book to you guys. It's called Traffic.
What's it about?
Traffic.
What do you guys think about books?
Wow.
How's that for a broad question? Wow. But there's nothing to say about Dolly Parton. That's interesting. She's a, you know, she's a national treasure. We all love her. And it's really cool that she's sending these books out.
It would be very interesting to know how she became, or the organization became aware of a need for books in prison waiting rooms for families. That's such a niche way to give books. I would never have thought that that's something that might be needed.
I really, really like that. I think that's really cool. Because obviously these kids, it's not their fault that one of their parents is incarcerated. And you can only imagine the difficulties of trying to square that in your tiny little head, like that you have a parent that's locked up, because you still love that parent with all your heart and you still want to see them and want to be with them. And when you go there to prison, you don't want to feel like you're in prison visiting your parents, like the very small amount of time. So like every time I see a picture with one of those like people in lockup who's posing with their family in front of a mural of something beautiful because they can't really get out, you know, obviously. So my heart just breaks for them a little bit. And those kids, I mean, like, God bless all those families who have to deal with that. That's such a difficult position to be in. And I, you know, people need to pay for their crimes, but for the kids, what a tough thing for those kids to be in. So the Dolly's doing this thing. I think that's really neat. Speaking of books, really fast, I was interested about this because they were talking about books and Jack said he didn't like to read books. Do you guys read? Do you guys like to consume? I mean, we do so much reading here for the show and just in the general business that we're in, we have to read a bunch of newsy stuff. But do you guys escape from the news and read books? Matt, do you get into it?
I wish I had more time for leisure reading. The most important thing, I think the greatest thing my mom did for me was she read to me from a very young age. A lot of classics, a lot of Chronicles of Narnia, things
I love
that,
Narnia.
The Hobbit. And that was a profound influence on me. The library is one of my favorite places to go as a kid. And, you know, I still love reading. Don't have as much time for it, but I still love reading.
How old
Lisa,
were you?
How about you? Oh, yeah,
can
sorry.
I ask? I want to know, how old were you guys when you learned to read?
I honestly started before I entered school.
Yeah.
I was already picking up on it. So, yeah, I was very young.
Same age as everybody else, I think, 12, 13.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, whatever age you learn, that's when I learned.
That's one of my core memories, is sitting by the sliding glass door window in the sun, reading Dr. Seuss's Hop on Pop, and I think I was less than 4 years old. And I just remember reading it and reading out loud, and it just like...
Did you feel like it was magic?
Oh my gosh. Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah,
In the mornings, I go out, like kind of the routine we have in the mornings is I get up really early. I just like, I've always been an early riser, even though the show here ends late. I always get up by like, if I sleep until 6, I feel like I've slept the day away.
Good
so
grief.
Yeah, I'm up really early and I have kids who also get up really early. So it works out. But we go out, it's like the best thing in the world. We go out in the living room. They always want me to read them a book. Like sometimes they do, not always. But when I do get the opportunity, like sit down and read them a book and you just watch their little faces and they get so excited to read Berenstain Bears or whatever it is. I love it. It's just such a special time. Just like exactly what you're talking about. You're like just seeing this magic happen. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're older, like my older kids are just starting to read. Like my third grader, he reads well. But my kindergartner now is just learning to read. And you're watching them. You're just going like, wow, you know, that's amazing that you can do this unbelievable thing. You're a grown up now. You know, you're fully grown up. So that's fun. Are you reading any books now as an adult or is it still Dr. Seuss?
I have to say I read a lot of news. I read a lot of feature stories in newspapers across the country. I haven't picked up a book for probably a year.
Yeah. I have a recommend for you.
Okay.
It's really interesting. I'm reading this book right now. It's called The Curious Case of Rudolf Diesel, and it's about the inventor of the diesel engine. And it takes place back just before World War I. And it's written by this guy named Douglas Brunt. And it's really fascinating because the engine didn't exist before this guy invents the diesel engine. And there was other, like there was a steam engine, but he was like really the first guy to crack this giant code that like just changed the entire world. And, but then he disappears in a really mysterious way.
Real? Is it true?
It's a true story. Huh. Yeah. And he disappears in a very mysterious, and there's all these like actors back then, not like movie actors, but like bad actors who they suspect might have had something to do with it. Did they? Didn't they? And so it's like, it turns into like this like whodunit murder mystery. So it's very entertaining. I highly recommend it. If you ever want to...
Say the title again.
It's called The Curious Case of Rudolf Diesel.
Okay.
Yeah, really good read. All right. We got a lot more coming up. Stick around. Next, I'm going to talk to a buddy of mine, Aaron Granillo. There's a big baseball gambling story happening right now. And some new information just came out today, and it's just fascinating. I'm so interested in it. So Aaron's going to join us. He's going to tell us all about it. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
Sign up for Mariner's Mail to receive presale offers, exclusive content, and more directly to your inbox for free. Mariner's Mail subscribers get first dibs on all the latest ticket news and action from T-Mobile Park. Go to mariners.com/insider to join the club today.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Choke Points with Chris Sullivan.
I am not a huge fan of left lane camping. Washington State Trooper Rick Johnson says,
unless you're passing another vehicle, you're not to be in the furthest left general purpose lane of a multiple lane interstate.
Tuesdays and Thursdays on Seattle's Morning News.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I want to talk about something that everybody in the sports world is talking about. And I'm really, really interested in this. I don't know much about baseball, though, right now. I used to know a lot about it, but I don't as much anymore. So when I want to know something about baseball, I go to the resident expert here at Cairo Radio. That's Aaron Granillo. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jake. I appreciate that I'm the at least the resident expert within the newsroom.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know,
we got a
more
whole
than
sports department over there, but we don't need them.
What do you need them? This is a different station.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to talk about some gambling and baseball. This Shohei Ohtani stuff I find really fascinating. Because I'm just about to start reading this book right now on Pete Rose that I have been eagerly awaiting. And obviously, you know Pete Rose's story. Pete Rose was famously one of the best, was he like the best hitter in all of baseball history?
Yes, most hits, yeah.
Until he got busted for gambling.
Right.
And now he can't be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And now it feels like the whole culture around gambling has so changed around professional sports that, like, would he have been kicked out based on, I don't know, like, who knows?
I'm in the camp of Pete should be in the Hall of Fame.
With an asterisk.
Yeah, just let him go.
Just
but
let
yeah,
him go.
Okay, fine. An asterisk is fine, but he should certainly be in the Hall, yeah.
I mean, what he accomplished was amazing.
Undeniable.
Nobody, yeah, undeniable.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's going on with Shohei Ohtani?
Okay, so it looks like Shohei Ohtani was just a victim of a massive theft, which is what his attorneys said when this story first broke a couple weeks ago. So his interpreter, his longtime friend, like his best bud, or so he thought, Ippe Mizuhara, has now been accused of bank fraud. He's the former interpreter of Shohei, and what this affidavit from California is saying is that Ippe stole more than $16 million over 2 years from Shohei Ohtani, and he stole this money so he could pay off gambling debts to an illegal sports book. So he's accused of bank fraud, and he faces now up to 30 years in prison.
What's crazy about this is Ippe was not just his interpreter, like you said, but like was his best friend.
Yeah.
And when I saw, anytime you saw footage of Shohei.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime I saw footage of Shohei, because he's like baseball's golden god right now. He's like the most exciting thing since Babe Ruth. He can pitch, he can hit, he does everything.
Yep.
He's a phenom. So when you would see videos of Shohei, even on the field sometimes, like practicing, Ippe would be nearby.
Yep.
Because he was his interpreter. Like Shohei, at least to the world, doesn't speak English to anybody.
Right.
He speaks just in Japanese.
Yep.
And so Ippei would be his main connection to everybody. And he would kind of be like, he wasn't like an imposing figure, but he's kind of like the first line of defense mm-hmm. against anybody that might come up to Shohei or like want something. Ippei was his guy. Yeah. And I imagine that their friendship was like rock solid. They traveled everywhere together. He was just like his shadow. So mm-hmm. what a crazy thing it must be to have this guy suddenly not in your life anymore.
Yeah. I mean, he was so close to Shohei that, I mean, he trusted him. Ohtani trusted Ippei with his money because according to what the prosecutors are saying now is that Ippei helped Ohtani set up a bank account when he first got hired when he first signed with the Los Angeles Angels in 2018. So Ippei was in charge of that bank account. I mean, Shohei trusted him that much with his money. So the money would funnel into
crazy
Shohei's account, but Ippei would somehow have access to it because he was the one, like, besides Shohei, he was the only one who had access to it.
Which is really nuts because, like, a lot of times it's a business manager who might have access to those things.
Yep. Nope. It was his interpreter, his best friend. So here is what the U.S. Attorney for the Central District of California, Martin Estrada, said today.
Phone and bank records show that Mr. Mitsuhara appears to have accessed Mr. Otani's bank account online. What is more, Mr. Mitsuhara lied to the bank to access the account.
He says they have recorded phone calls from the bank of Mizuhara actually saying that he's Ohtani, tricking and deceiving these bank employees so he can withdraw these huge sums of money to pay off the bookie. One of these transactions was like $500,000, according to the affidavit.
What's really interesting about this is I heard endless conversations about this, and I listened to podcasts about it. All these people who were talking at the time, when the news first came out, when it was just $4.5 million, they were all saying, well, how is it possible that Shohei would give this guy access to these accounts? Because every time somebody gets something wired, yada, yada, you have to do voice transfers. You have to do all these. There's all these barriers, these safety mechanisms in place. People were kind of thinking, oh, was this the way that he was figuring out how to, was Shohei gambling on sports? Even Pete Rose, somebody talked to Pete Rose. This was during March Madness that all this story broke. Mm-hmm. Somebody found Pete Rose at a bar and they interviewed him. They said, what do you think about all this Shohei stuff? And Pete Rose, have you heard this clip?
I have not, no.
I have it somewhere, but Pete Rose said, he goes, well, all I can say is one, and he's like 82 years old, yeah. Now. He's an old man. He goes, all I can say is one thing. I sure wish I had an interpreter back in the day. I'd be in the Hall of Fame.
That's good.
And everyone was kind of thinking like, well, he's not totally wrong there. Like it is this level of like plausible deniability that you can say, well, that was the guy who was doing it. It wasn't me.
Right.
But now it's looking like the number has jumped up to 16 million. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. if they're saying that they actually have recordings of this guy pretended to be Ohtani, then, I mean, that kind of seals the deal.
It kind of does. And according to Martin Estrada, again, I mean, he says Ohtani is completely innocent in all of this. Here's also what he had to say.
Mr. Ohtani is considered a victim in this case. There is no evidence to indicate that Mr. Ohtani authorized the over $16 million of transfers from his account to the bookmakers.
And also, just a sidebar here, but an important note that it sounds like none of the bets that were placed were actually on baseball games. So that even clears Ohtani even further, because if he was betting on,
he wasn't,
you know,
fixing
Angels
anything.
Games,
yeah.
Exactly. So Ohtani looks like just a victim of,
dude,
yeah.
Can you believe how much Major League Baseball is like sighing relief right now?
No doubt.
Because
no doubt.
How much
He's
were they?
He's their golden child. You're right.
Yeah. Totally. Like how much were they sweating this? They were just like, oh my gosh, if this guy was gambling. Like, what are we going to do? He just signed. So he played for the Angels. He was phenomenally successful with the Angels. He had a big contract for them, but nowhere near what he's playing for now. But he's got, right now, he just signed a 10-year, $700 million deal with the Dodgers just across town.
Yeah.
He's playing for the Dodgers now for $700 million. That's the richest contract in sports history.
Ever.
And so the idea, so people might be wondering, like, well, how do you not notice if $16 million is missing? Well, when you're making... What is he making per year? Like $70 million a year.
Yes, although he did defer a lot of the money so the Dodgers could stack their lineup even further while he sort of waits to be paid. But beside the point,
but the guy has so much cash coming in.
Endorsements, and all the money in
the
world.
That's just his contract to play baseball.
Right,
Think of all the endorsements added onto that. Like triple that number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so $16 million, that's a lot of money.
To you and me.
It's a lot of money, I think, the vast majority of Americans. But yes, to Shohei Ohtani, Look, let's jump change.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I wish you wouldn't have gotten caught.
And if you recall, the original story was, this guy's obviously just a big fat liar, if you believe the affidavit. He told reporters at ESPN, because they were going to publish this story, that Shohei was aware of his debts.
That's right.
And Shohei lent him $500,000 to pay off these debts. And the next day, when ESPN was going to publish this report, Ippe is like, actually, that's not true.
He doesn't know anything.
Shohei didn't know anything. And Shohei looks like he's still the golden child of Major League Baseball.
Well, I'm so glad for Major League Baseball. Yeah. I actually really like Shohei. He seems like a good dude.
Yeah.
And he's phenomenally talented.
Incredibly.
So you want to root for a winner. All right, Aaron Granella, thanks so much.
Happy to do it, Jake.
All right, we're going
to
be right back here on Cairo Nights.
Whether you're planning a special birthday party for 14 friends and family or a company outing for up to 400 coworkers, Mariner's Suites are the perfect spot for your next get-together. Enjoy catering, VIP parking, private entry, and more. Reserve today at mariners.com/suites.
Dave Ross on Seattle's Morning News.
It was a traffic miracle, and what made this miracle possible was the presence of traffic officers, professionally trained human beings.
Weekdays 6 to 9, streaming live on your smart speaker. You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hey, I saw this story and I found this really encouraging. I actually thought this was a really great thing. Listen to this. And I don't know how this is going to play out yet, but I hope this is maybe the first step in many, many steps forward that people will take to protect young people from the dangers of social media, which I know we've talked about a bunch on the show. And, you know, when you say young people, it makes you automatically sound old, but they are. They're a lot younger. And people online these days they're in a lot of danger if they don't know what to look out for. So Instagram, listen to what Instagram is doing. They just put out this release. This was today. Instagram put this out, and they said that Instagram will blur nude images sent to teens to curb sextortion. You might be wondering how teenagers are even getting nude pictures across on Instagram, but kids can do a lot of crazy stuff online these days. But it looks like Instagram's actually taking a positive step forward to putting a stop to this. So listen to some of these details. While people overwhelmingly use DMs to share what they love with their friends, this is Instagram's release today talking about this, sextortion scammers may also use private messages to share or ask for intimate images. To help address this, we'll soon start testing out new nudity protection features in Instagram DMs, which automatically blurs images detected as containing nudity and encourages people to think twice before sending nude images. I think this is fantastic. I'm so happy that they're doing this. I think they've, I don't know if the technology has just recently become available or if it's because I really do feel like there's kind of this momentum shift happening, almost like a sea change, where I think grown-ups are starting to step in and go, hey, you know what? Like, we don't need to allow this. We don't need to allow these companies full access to our kids and then let them see things that they shouldn't be seeing. Like, parents are stepping up and saying, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to put up with it anymore. And I think some of these tech companies are realizing, hey, if we don't figure out how to put in some safety devices on these things, we're going to lose a lot of users because parents are going to take them away from their kids because parents love their kids and they want to protect them. I'm a parent. Trust me. I know. All right, and I've said many times, I'm going to make sure that my kids don't have phones, which you guys think is crazy. I am going to let them have phones. They're not going to be smartphones. They're going to be dumb phones. I don't know if they're called doodle bugs or what they're called, but you can buy phones which do what phones were originally intended to do, which is not to send pictures back and forth to each other, but instead meant to call somebody. Like when I was a kid, if I had a cell phone, it was because my dad and my mom were like, all right, Jake's going to be in the family car. Let's let him use the family cell phone. And if he gets into trouble, he can call us or he can call 911 and we can help him. That's what cell phones were like originally kids were carrying them around for. Maybe they had Snake on the Nokia phones if you were really cool. But now you have the entire world of the internet in your pocket if you have a smartphone. And that could be very dangerous because it gives people access, like bad actors out there on the internet, not like bad Hollywood actors, like bad people on the internet
seek out young people who might make stupid decisions and might do bad things because there's weirdos out there. In Florida, they have actually banned, they've actually signed a new law. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis recently signed this new law, which I think is great. It's going to be challenged in court, of course, but I hope it stands up. Basically, what it says is 14-year-olds, anybody under the age of 14, if you want to use social media, your parents are going to have to sign on. They're going to have to actually submit real-world documents that prove that they have given you permission to be on the social media site. And you can't just click a button and promise that you're a parent giving your kid permission. You're going to actually have to, like, parents are going to have to get involved. It's going to force parents to be involved in their kids' lives, which I think is a really good thing. Governor Ron DeSantis was talking about this on the day he signed the bill.
Being buried in those devices all day is not the best way to grow up. It's not the best way to get a good education. Now, with things like social media and all this, you know, you can have a kid in the house, safe seemingly, and then you have predators that can get right in there, into your own home. You could be doing everything right, but they know how to get and manipulate these different platforms. And so it's created huge problems.
What I really like about this topic, one, I think it's a really important one. It's like one of the things that defines our world right now is social media. The growth of it has been so exponential. It's so massive, and it kind of touches everything. So we need to make sure that our kids are safe and they are protected. I think we need more laws shielding children from predatory tech companies, honestly, because they have known that this stuff's been going on for a long time. And only when parents have gotten really vocal about it, only when the laws are being starting to put on the books, which will hold tech companies responsible if these kids see any of this stuff, then, you know, there's going to be a penalty. And now the tech companies are stepping up and saying, whoa. Okay, yeah, no, we can stop this. Like Instagram, for instance, is now saying we can protect children from nude images. We can automatically blur nude images if somebody sends these on one of these DMs. Which I don't know how long they've had that technology, but I don't think they just got it yesterday. But they're just doing this now. This is a step in the right direction. There might be some disagreement on this too. And if you disagree with this and you're one of those people out there that are like, no, phones are great for kids and social media is really great for kids, give them access to the internet. They need to learn how to protect themselves. I want you to text me on the text line, 888-973-5476, and I will just basically tell you that you're wrong. So actually, no, don't text me. But if you feel like it, whatever, you can. But you are wrong if you are going to text me that. I promise you, you're wrong. This is a good thing. I'm happy they're doing this. I'm happy that they're going to be protecting kids. And I hope more states follow this so that, parents have some leverage to protect their kids. It's not just parents who are saying, oh, I have to be the one parent that's not going to let my kid have social media. Then the kid's complaining and saying, everybody in the world has a phone. Why can't I have a phone? This gives parents some leverage to say, you know what? No, like, it's not even legal in this state, so you can't use it. And that just ends it. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.